services, and organizations that benefit you as a citizen of Forsyth County. Welcome to Empowering You, your host, Brian Anthony.
Well, once again, it's high noon in the triad. Good afternoon to you. This is Empowering You. I'm Brian Anthony, your host. Empowering You is where we spotlight local nonprofits in our city, county, and region, and the many services they provide the citizens of Forsyth County and the Triad. We'll also introduce as many of our local corporations that have community initiatives designed to benefit you and continue to make our region a great place to live. Not only will we feature nonprofits and corporate community initiatives, we'll also hear from some of our local entities like the City of Winston, the Health Department, and we've also added another monthly feature that focuses on staying true to the name of the show, Empowering You, by focusing on empowerment, specifically women's empowerment, with our special guest partner, Forsyth Women's Magazine editor and publisher, Brooke Eagle. All that packed into an hour show. We hope that you make it a point to join us every Sunday following Money Making Conversations at noon. We promise to give you plenty of information. Also, if you miss it, the podcast is available on our website, as is all of our public affairs programming, just by logging on to our website at WSNCradio.org and clicking media on our navigation bar. As a reminder, you can also access our website on our free mobile app that you can download right now in your device's app store, whether that's Apple or Play Store. All right, once again, it's time for us on Empowering You to have a monthly visit and a monthly update with the Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools. Today, recently there's been a decision made on the Board of Education level that I think is going to be resounding. We're going to address that today with the Chief Officer of Learning Supports, Dr. Lionel Cato. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. As I've received information from the marketing team of Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools, there recently has been a decision made on a code of character, conduct, and support.
Yes.
All right, let's first of all talk about Dr. Cato, what's your background, and what puts you in a role to execute this decision?
This is my 22nd year in education.
Okay.
You know, my background is primarily working with high school students as a teacher and also middle school teacher and administrator at all levels, elementary, middle, and high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a pretty good background of working with all types of kids in different parts of our state. And when the district decided that they wanted to embark on this work and look and see how we could better serve our students through the code of conduct at that time, they, you know, we reorganized and I was the one selected to kind of set up this office and set up the structures with our partnering a consultant to bring this work to fruition.
Okay. Good. Now, code of conduct. If I'm thinking just in general terms, that has to do with some type of reaction or response to some type of activity that requires action on the backside.
Typically, yes.
Yeah.
Most codes of conduct are very reactionary, and you know they're answering. You know, somebody's done something wrong.
Okay.
And so, what are we going to do to punish? I mean, it's usually really focused on punishment.
Okay.
Whereas this is a code of character, conduct, and support. We were very intentional in making sure that we called it first a code of character.
Okay.
And added support to it, because this is about more than just behavior.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We want this to be about when the behavior happens, how do we support students? How do we build character to prevent the behavior to begin with? And
mm-hmm.
So it's a multifaceted document. And not just for students, it'll give teachers tools as well to help prevent some things from occurring in their classrooms and help build better citizens and better students.
Okay. Now, we were talking off mic. I'm not going to pretend that we live in a pristine society or community at all. We see the news reports. We see what's going on and happening in the streets with some of our youth, what's happening with schools across the country. I can take you into another region of the country and show you how in that region of the country, that's not where you want to be when it comes to conduct, because it's a little bit more severe than it is as in terms of what I see and what I've experienced in my lifetime in this part of the country. Now, with that said, this is the beginnings of what we're seeing in the news, is the beginnings of ending up in that situation. And that's not where Winston-Salem wants to be, or anybody in society really wants to be. So why is it important for this district to have, first of all, this code of character, conduct and support?
Well, you said a mouthful there. We definitely don't want our students, our young people, to continue in ways that are not going to be productive for the future health of our community or their families or their futures.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to the pandemic, we had challenges with discipline, and we had challenges with some behaviors that were occurring in our schools, which, you know, schools are a microcosm of society.
Yes.
And we're not unique to any compared to other districts. I mean, we all have the same sorts of issues. But in particular, we had to realize that if we want our students to succeed academically and socially, and we want to address some of the emotional things that are occurring,
mm-hmm.
and some of the trauma that they bring into the school from the community and mm-hmm. from some of their home living situations, we had to think about doing things differently and readjusting, because, you know, like I said before, a typical code, student misbehaves, they either get usually out of school
mm-hmm.
suspension mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. in-school suspension. But we really looked at the data and looked at the tens and thousands of hours of instructional time that are lost from kids sitting in an ISS room with no real structure, or being out of school. Out of school suspended. And if they're out of school, they're also in the community possibly doing things that are not productive and causing problems, you know, from the community during the daytime when they should be in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking all that into account, looking at the fact that a lot of our discipline data showed that there was a huge disproportionality of application.
Okay.
You know, students of color bear the brunt of a lot of our exclusionary practices.
Okay.
And again, that's not unique to Winston-Salem Forsyth. I mean, it's a nationwide issue. But really looking at that piece of data and realizing that students with disabilities as well bear the brunt of a lot of exclusionary practices that are not serving them very well. And so if we're ever going to close achievement gaps and really and truly help our students become better people for tomorrow and to graduate with the skills, social and academic skills, to be successful, then we just had to reconfigure how we do business and come up with some new strategies.
Okay. Now, this wasn't a reactionary process. How long did this process, in terms of coming up with the idea of where you move forward in the future with the school district and coming to fruition where it is now, how long does that process take?
So this is a multi-year process. It's definitely not something that happens overnight.
Okay.
We didn't get in the situation overnight, and so we're not going to get out of it overnight. And so it's going to require some training and pulling together of all of our community stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
Winston-Salem Forsyth is a very, very blessed school district in that we have so many resources here that other places don't have. Community-wise, we've got financial resources, we've got mental health resources, we've got behavioral health resources. We have several universities here. We are, you know, sort of a mecca of academia, mm-hmm, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Winston-Salem State University, where we sit, is a prime example of that. There's lots of history here of social activism and things of that nature. So the spirit to do the right thing and to get better is here in this district more so than it is in some other places.
Yes.
And so the process over the course of this year, where we are now, we just unveiled the draft of the new code to the school board, which is what you referenced at the start of the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And that involved over 300 different stakeholders across the community, parents, community groups,
mm-hmm.
teachers, mm-hmm. counselors, administrators. We were being facilitated by an organization called Engaging Schools,
okay.
which does this work across the country. But students were also a very big part, and that's actually one of my favorite parts of this process was working with the students
mm-hmm.
and hearing what they had to say about what goes on in schools and how we could help them avoid some of the challenges and how we could help some of their friends avoid some challenges if they're having difficulty. I always say, kids, we don't listen to them enough, and if you ask them and you talk to them, they'll help you solve just about any problem.
They're smarter than we were at that age.
Yeah, they know a lot.
They're smart, yes.
They know a lot, and so it is definitely a multi-year process.
Okay.
And we're just in the beginning stages of of development of the code, and we'll have some training ahead of us for all of these different groups of people to understand their role in mm-hmm. implementing the code.
Okay. I wanted people to understand that it's not a knee-jerk reaction to what's going on, obviously in the school district and in the streets as well, that this process was well thought out, took a long time, took a lot of stakeholders to bring to the table to get, including the students themselves, to get their opinion of what they feel about different, I guess, activities that take place and the results of them and what ends up happening on the conduct,
yes.
on the conduct side. Now, you mentioned earlier the disproportionate amount of impact that it has on students of color, students with disability. The code, as I understand it and as you have told us, has a particular focus on the use or overuse of exclusionary punishment. Why that focus?
Well, we know that if students, first defining exclusionary punishment, we include in-school suspension because
mm-hmm.
it removes them from the classroom
mm-hmm.
as an exclusionary punishment. And, of course, out-of-school suspension, expulsions are rare, but they do happen in some instances. But how do we avoid those? Because if they're not in school, then we can't support them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not under the teacher's instruction. We can't support them to correct their behavior.
Right.
Because they're not with us.
Right.
And so that also leads to lower academic
mm-hmm.
scores, lower academic performance,
mm-hmm.
Higher dropout rates.
Yes.
Once you miss so many days of school, why bother coming? So you're absent, you're skipping school. And so it just begins a spiral
mm-hmm.
and it impacts so many things down the line.
Okay.
And so that's why we zeroed in on the exclusionary practices in particular.
Okay. Does cultural differences help add to this? The understanding of what a student might be going through in a household that doesn't resemble yours as a teacher?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That has always been that's always been an issue
mm-hmm.
when you have teachers, by and large. It's not a white female issue, but the majority of teachers are white and female
mm-hmm.
nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the
how
fact.
It is, yes.
And students can be very diverse, and so you have to look at things like bias, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even necessarily a racial thing. I mean, because there are many African American teachers and teachers of color, Latino teachers that also may struggle with student discipline and connecting with students. Their generation is just very different from the way that we may have been raised, and
mm-hmm.
so there's that disconnect at times.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's definitely cultural factors that come into play when you think about relationships and how that plays into misbehavior and misinterpretation of behaviors. We're increasingly becoming more diverse with our Latino population. I think it's like over 100 different languages are spoken in our district.
Right.
And so, we have refugee children. We have children from all over the world in our district. And so a lot of those cultural factors may contribute to some of the discipline issues that you see.
Okay. I got you. You mentioned exclusionary punishments and suspensions and how they impact learning. You've been at the forefront at the beginning of this process of bringing this to fruition. How is this code going to help change that?
So a big major part of the code are what we call universal practices that we are going to implement across the board in every classroom in the district.
Okay.
And so these are strategies and techniques that every teacher will be trained on basically how to manage different aspects of the classroom from the time students come through the door, from the time when they sit down, they're doing their work, from the time that there may be some assessments going on to the time they get up and leave the classroom. Some additional tools. Teachers are very good at their content. They're very knowledgeable in content, but this is a reality of an educator. Schools of education don't do the best job always of training teachers on actually how to manage the classroom.
Okay.
And so that we hope it, or we believe, and research has shown is going to help eliminate some of the issues on the front end.
Okay.
You know, because I'm connecting with my kids. My kids understand very clearly what is expected of them when they come in the room. If A happens, then I can try B. I can try C, D. You know, I don't just have one or two things in my toolbox. I'll have like five or six things that I can try before I have to write that referral on a kid, and that may end up being excluded from school. Taking a look at discretionary language, even. How do you, the code is going to help us define, more closely define what rules are and what a violation entails. Disrespect, what does disrespect actually mean, and what does that look like? Because you know, you and I both know, I may feel disrespected because you looked at me a certain way, you rolled your eyes at me, and someone else may not take that way, and so I may end up with a referral because, you know, rolling eyes is offensive to me, and that could escalate into me being put out of school because I rolled my eyes, but I wasn't necessarily being disrespectful. That may be a communication pattern in my community. That may be something that I do at home. I may have to talk loud at home because I'm one of however many kids, and so maybe I need someone to process with me in the classroom. You know, I'm not being disruptive, quote unquote. You know, I'm talking the way that I speak at home. But to another teacher that's not used to that, they may think that you're being disruptive. You get a referral and escalates. You end up out of school. Or it ends up in the back and forth when, you know, you're not being disrespectful. You're not being disruptive, but you're being accused of something. And so you get back and forth with the teacher. And so working with teachers and all of the adults that have their hands on kids during the day, from teachers, administrators, counselors, social workers, custodians, bus drivers.
Everybody comes in contact with the kids.
Office workers. You know, what are these strategies? What are these things that we can do to kind of better process with our kids when these types of situations happen? What are some tools that we can use other than just write the referral and send them to the administrator? And what are some tools that administrators can use other than OSS or ISS to keep our kids in school that don't necessarily have to be, you know, excluded? There are going to be times when kids have to be excluded. There are going to be times when that happens. But it doesn't have to be as much as it does happen, and we want to be able to put those tools in the hands of our educators.
Okay. All right, we're talking to, in case you're just now joining us, this is a very interesting conversation, but a much-needed conversation. We're in our update portion of empowering you with the Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools this week, and we have the Chief Officer of Learning Supports, Dr. Lionel Cato, with us on the Code of Character, Conduct, and Support that's being implemented in the school district in the near future. Now, as you've indicated, this is a new and strong focus on trying to prevent and help with restorative interventions and helping students learn from their mistakes, which usually typically takes place at the home and in their daily experiences. But you're in school most of the time, so there are a lot of those situations that are going to occur in school as well. How to get kids not to repeat these essentially unskilled behaviors. So if that's the that's the focus. Where do you see the implementation of this code of conduct helping in that regard?
And so students, whether they're pre-K, you know, middle school, elementary, high school, it's developmentally appropriate for them to make mistakes mm-hmm. and to do silly things and mm-hmm. and to misbehave from time to time. It's not going to be the majority necessarily, but, I mean, we've all done things coming up, and, you know, you have to learn from those things. And so what's unique about this code of character, conduct, and support is that once that referral is written, the teacher's done everything they can possibly do.
Okay.
There are accountable consequences, you know, which could include up to and including OSS, out of school suspension.
Mm-hmm.
It could be as something as simple as a conference. It could be something as simple as a timeout room or something of that nature where they can go and process and go back to the setting.
Mm-hmm.
But attached to the consequence is also a restorative intervention and also something that we call closing the loop.
Okay.
And so if you have disturbed the peace of the school community, let's say you've had some kind of conflict with a classmate or with a teacher, how do we restore you back to your place in your school community? Mm-hmm. It doesn't make you a terrible student. It doesn't make you a terrible person. You made a mistake.
Right.
You should be able to come back and have a clean slate. But you also have to have the opportunity to learn why what you did was wrong
mm-hmm.
and to make amends with the individual or the class or whatever entity you have offended.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a restorative intervention is attached to each of those consequences. And so you could have a mediation. You could, if the person doesn't want to mediate, you know, there still needs to be restoration because there's been someone that's offended.
Right.
And there's someone that is the offender.
Right.
And so there has to be some kind of conversation or something.
And a resolve at some
point. Mm-hmm. And then closing the loop, you know, typically in the code, so a kid gets suspended from school. They go to ISS. They just go right back to class. Nobody talks to them. Nobody mm-hmm. processes with them. Parent may or may not be aware of what even happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so the closing the loop piece is kind of give some closure to that. You know, what is the last communication piece with the parent? Is there an apology issued?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do we close the loop and then move on with life
and
not have to keep bringing up the same thing or reliving the same mistake
mm-hmm.
Or making the same mistake over and over? So the opportunity is there to really build that character piece
mm-hmm.
And to, you know, and make it a teachable moment. Discipline,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the root words of discipline, disciple. Discipleship mm-hmm. is being able to teach and being able to help people learn.
Right.
And so they're kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, adults make mistakes. And, you know, we have a Department of Corrections.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do a good job of correcting either.
Not at all.
Once adults make mistakes.
Not at all.
But when you know better, you kind of do better. You look at research and you look at see what some other places have done across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you try to build that structure in place, and that's what we're trying to do here with this code is to put it into action.
Okay.
Build those structures.
Okay. Now, we've talked about a lot of points regarding this code of character and conduct. We've talked about the stakeholders that have been involved in this, from the students to consultants to other people. We know, knowing society the way that we do, once this information gets out, once the news releases gets out and it's reported on, Facebook will be a buzz. Everybody will have some kind of comment, some kind of conversation about it, and definitely an opinion on one side of the fence or the other. How can the community look at the code and comment on it? And you guys are seeking their input as well and their feedback. How can they have feedback?
And you're absolutely right, because there's all sorts of comments and conversations going on social media now.
Mm-hmm.
And so
doesn't surprise me one bit.
And so we have a website that's been set up as part of our regular district website, wsfcs.k12.nc.us/code, C-O-D-E.
Mm-hmm.
And on that particular part of the site, there's information. You can find a draft of the code where you can review it.
Okay.
There's a link there where you could actually upload your own personal comments about the code, which comes directly to me, and then I'll share them with our team
okay.
in the central office. And you can comment on any part of the code. You can just give general comments. Any stakeholder can do that, whether they're educators, whether they're in the community or not.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a couple of community forums held. The first one is going to be on Monday at East Forsyth High School from 5:30 to 6:30 in their media center.
Okay.
There's a virtual forum also on that same day at that same time, 5:30 to 6:30 on Monday. We're going to have a concurrent virtual session running, so people that may not be able to make it out or just prefer to participate virtually, it's easier for them. They can log on. They can go to that same website and find a link there.
Okay.
It'll be put there soon where they can log in and have a sort of an education session on the code and then maybe ask some questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one that we have scheduled so far is on Monday, May 23rd, for our Hispanic and Latino community.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be specifically geared toward them in Spanish-speaking community at Trinity Moravian Church at 220 East Sprague Street.
Okay.
And that's also from 5:30 to 6:30.
Okay.
And we have plans. We're waiting on confirmation from some locations for our next round, which we want to do a few more before Memorial Day.
Okay.
In the community. We'll have at least one more virtual session, and then we'll have at least two more face-to-face sessions in different parts of the county.
Okay, good. Now, that's parents. Your involvement is critical in students' behavior in school. I grew up with two educators in my household. I was telling Doc, when I was coming through, that meant if I acted up in school back when they had, I guess it was called corporal punishment back then, mm-hmm. That meant three SWATs at the school from the principal because they knew my parents. I stayed in the district with my grandmother. The school was in the district of my grandmother. So when I got home, obviously somebody called my grandmother to let her know what happened at school. That's another couple of taps. Then when I get home, I got two educators to deal with. That's additional taps. That doesn't exist anymore. Of course, that is time gone beyond. But the parent-teacher relationship sometimes is adversarial mm-hmm. because all parents want to protect their kids.
Right.
When I had a son going through high school, I would go to parent-teacher meetings and be blown away by some of the things that my son did in school when I knew he knew better. But I understood a lot of everything that went around that. But without that involvement, of course, I'm going to defend him against the teacher. So your chance to have some input in this process, as opposed to spreading information that may be false on Facebook, not knowing the nuts and bolts of it, not being involved in these town hall meetings so that you can ask the questions where you have concern, especially when it comes to those students of color and disability.
Yes.
You really need to get involved, because don't assume that the district, being the authority, knows everything that they need to know about your child and your environment, because they do not.
Correct.
Okay, good. Did we miss anything in this conversation about this conduct that's coming, or anything that you want to highlight?
Well, to the point that you just made, mm-hmm. another unique part of this code is a section called Rights and Responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that section, students have a section called Rights and Responsibilities. Parents and caregivers have a section. And then the educator, the professionals have a section.
Okay.
And so in that section, it outlines, what you have a right to as a parent, as a student, and as a teacher, and mm-hmm. as an educator.
Mm-hmm.
But it also outlines your responsibilities to one another within your group and those external to the group, for you to be able to make sure that the students are having the most successful experience in school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say that, that is going to be a very key section for people to understand, to help rebuild or build stronger relationships between the homes and the schools.
Okay.
Because we all have a role to play, and
yes,
we've all got
yes.
to play our part.
Yes.
And we do have rights,
mm-hmm.
but we also have responsibilities that go with those things, and that requires some work on all of our parts to
yeah.
make sure that it happens.
Thank you very much. That's Dr. Lionel Cato, Chief Officer of Learning Supports for the Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools, talking on a very – last question. Is this being implemented this fall?
Yes, this is going to happen. It's going to start rolling out this fall. The teachers, there's a training that will happen over the summer. The teachers, when they get back to work, they'll receive their initial training on how to start implementing the code, and then there'll be training over the course of the year on the code. So this is definitely a big paradigm shift and has the potential to really impact our district positively going forward for many, many years. And so, you know, it's going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight. And, you know, people will, you know, need to be patient and just kind of trust the process you know, be positive about it and work to make sure that it's implemented well.
And professionally communicate, by the way.
Absolutely.
All right. That's Dr. Lionel Cato, Chief Officer of Learning and Support, Learning Supports with the Winston-Salem Forsyth County Schools, talking about what is obviously coming in the near future in the district, and that's the code of character, conduct, and support. Thank you for your time, and thank you for this vital information.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Stay tuned, because if I told you, if you're making $40,000 a year, couldn't afford to put medical prescriptions on your insurance, our next guest could help you, would you stay tuned? Do that. In 90 seconds, we'll be back, and I'll introduce you to our next guest on Empowering You, 90.5 FM, WSNC. Community and nonprofit organizations in the Triad. A portion of our mission at WSNC is to connect the community. We have several platforms to help enhance awareness throughout the Triad of the many activities and events provided by countless organizations. Workshops, lectures, motivational speakers, healthcare screenings, seminars, you name it, it's happening in the Triad. We strive to be a major connection for our listeners and want to make sure to offer organizations consistent access to inform the public. If you're responsible for your organization's marketing and/or publicity, or you know who is and can pass this information on to them, at least 2 weeks prior to the event, send us details on organization letterhead to WSNC Community Calendar. Email it to wsncfm@gmail.com. WSNC is an NPR affiliate owned and operated by Winston-Salem State University. Okay, we're back. This is Empowering You on a beautiful Sunday. Brian Anthony, your host. And for the last couple of weeks, I think we've touched on some medical issues. I don't know why health is always prominent, has to be prominent, because so many people are going through so many things health-wise. So today, let me tell you how I came about this guest. I'm reading emails in my office, and we get tons of emails about different things going on with different organizations. And I saw this headline that said, North Carolina Free Pharmacy Program. And I thought, free pharmacy program? Let me call them and find out what this is about. And let me see if I can get them on the show, because I know personally that the cost of medication is constantly on the rise. We always hear about it in the news. We always hear our senior citizens talk about it. So let me get, first of all, let me introduce Brenda Voss. I'm putting an enunciation or a French enunciation on your name, by the way. Brenda Voss, she's the CEO and the Chief Development Officer for MedAssist. And I put the names together and I go, MedAssist. Good morning. How are you?
I am great. How are you, Brian?
I'm cracking you up on it.
Love the French
accent.
Yeah,
the French Voss. Voss from South Carolina. Voss. Okay. All right. As I was mentioning, I had received a news release about this free pharmacy program, and we're going to get to that. But first, let's get into, because you might be an anomaly. What do they call it? I can't even say it.
Anomaly.
Being one of the only in the state, which makes you exclusive, which makes you the only one. Let's talk about MedAssist and what the mission of MedAssist is.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I am very excited to be talking about NC MedAssist. So if you are one that is uninsured with no prescription insurance and you fall within an eligibility when it comes to income, we can probably help you with your medication. Okay. We are an actual pharmacy. And yes, we have a headquartered in Charlotte, North Carolina, but we serve the entire state of North Carolina. There is no zip code that is more important than another to us as a statewide entity. And you mentioned our uniqueness of being the only one. We're the only statewide free pharmacy.
Okay.
So we know that there are other free pharmacies across the state, but they usually serve a certain region or a certain city or a certain county.
Okay.
And that's what they serve because we work with a lot of them.
Okay.
So for us, it's important that not only people that know about us are funders, but we want people that to know about us that need us.
Okay.
And that's why I'm so happy that we're talking today so we can get the word out.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that is breathing air at some point in time, you are in need of medicine. If you continue to live, at some point in time, you're going to be in need of some type of medicine to assist something going on in your body. I got to imagine if you don't have insurance that the cost of medication has to be sky high.
Absolutely.
It has to be sky high. So those people who don't have the insurance typically have to decide between a meal and medication, which is clearly not fair in the major scheme of life, but it is what it is. And so how do you go about, is this the type of program that takes all the stress out of that situation for them?
That's what we're trying to do.
Okay.
You're talking about people that are choosing to have their insulin or feed their family.
Wow.
And, you know, some of these vials are $300 a vial, and I don't know a person personally that can afford that in the long run.
Right.
Eventually, you're choosing.
Right.
Eventually, you have to say, you know, we have people that downsize their houses because they need to be able to afford their medicine. So that's our purpose. That's why we are here. That's why we exist. We have a ton, thousands of volunteers across the state. A staff and a board that are committed to making sure that those decisions are becoming less and less. As we get the word out, we can serve even more people. That is our hope, that anybody who's eligible knows where to go, that we are their pharmacy home.
Now, people that are uninsured typically fall below the poverty line. Now, that term poverty usually gives a person a perception of where a person is in their lifestyle or in their lives, which is not necessarily accurate. Let's talk about the poverty level now and what you guys consider as a threshold, as an income, to be able to assist most families.
Yeah, so I am so glad you asked this question because about a year ago, during the throes of COVID-19, we wanted to be able to serve more people. So at one point, we were serving 200% at or below the poverty level.
Okay.
But now we're serving, at or below, above the poverty level. But now we're serving 300%.
Okay.
So that means you could be a family of four making just over around $80,000 a year and be eligible for our services as long as you're uninsured and you don't have prescription medicine insurance. And if you're a family of one, you can make up to almost $40,000 a year.
Okay.
And we can help you. Okay. So you're right. When you see the word poverty or low income, sometimes it doesn't resonate that you could
you
be eligible for our program.
Right.
You may be under-resourced. You may be able to pay the bulk of your bills, but your medication is so expensive, you're having trouble sort of paying that.
Okay.
So that's more under-resourced than low income.
That's tough. And I'm hearing the medium income level being at $38,000 for one household. There are plenty of people here in Forsyth County that are single that make far be less $38,000. I guess the pay scale hasn't caught up with the economy yet.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. That's crazy.
It'd be interesting to see the new numbers with inflation and, and what's going on in the country.
That's insane. So, number one, you may fall below the poverty line based on this criteria, not necessarily your perception of what poverty is. So if people are out there going through health issues, going to the doctor, having to choose between medicine and whether to eat, or medicine and whether to pay your rent or mortgage, that's a tough decision to make. So how did this mission come about for you guys and, at MedAssist? And being an exclusive, taking on the state, that's a big challenge. That's a big, big challenge.
It is a big challenge. And when you talk about why we exist, we like to focus on the why. Why are we needed? Why do we do what we do? Why will we work as hard as we work? Why do our volunteers give up time? Why do people donate to us? We turned 25 this year. 25 years old. And this will be the first time a lot of people have even known that we existed.
Heard of MedAssist.
Exactly.
25 years in existence. If you've never heard of MedAssist before, that's why she's on the air today.
Yes.
It's important.
And at the beginning, it was a mission to serve seniors. Okay. At the time, there was no Medicare Part D. Okay. And so that way the seniors did not have to go without their medicine. So they started MedAssist of Mecklenburg.
Okay.
In 2009, we went statewide. The now governor at the time was the attorney general and gave us $2 million to go statewide so that we can serve all adults and children that were uninsured. Okay. and had low resources. To us, it was extremely important. For a long time, we only had the free prescription program.
Right.
And saw an opportunity to start over-the-counter medicine program as well. That's free. And have been traveling the state every week for the last 5 years, traveling the state, giving out free over-the-counter medicine. Okay. And so you may have heard of the mobile free pharmacy events if you're in Forsyth County or Guilford County. Highport, North Carolina, I think we went there, I don't even know how many times, four to six times over the last few years. And then starting partnerships with Novant Health and Wake Forest for Forsyth County so that we could get free over-the-counter medicine as well to people that need it. Now, that's a different eligibility. You do not, there's no income check. All you have to do is be a resident of North Carolina and be an adult, and you can get the free over-the-counter medicine. So I really want to preface that over-the-counter medicine has this sort of that, you know, this belief that you really don't need it. You know, over-the-counter medicine is like a nice to have,
like an aspirin,
but when you really think about the number of people that visit the ER because they simply did not have over-the-counter medicine in their cabinets. This is the impact that we're making.
Wow.
By filling a medicine cabinet, you're empowering that family to take care of themselves. We were in Raleigh, and a young mom came up to us in tears because she was getting a bag of medicine and that she was living in a women's shelter. She left an abusive relationship. She worked hourly as a waitress. She had a son that was living there with her. She said she felt more empowered now because she actually could give, we give out first aid product as well. She could actually put a Band-Aid on his boo-boo. And it brought her tears because she had nothing. When she left the relationship, she had nothing with her. And then she said now she doesn't have to stay home when he has a fever because she can treat the fever. And she can go to work because every time she didn't show for work, it impacted her paycheck.
Okay.
So you think something like Tylenol is a small deal, but it
it's not.
In very rural communities, a lot of people use the ambulance to pick up their kids because they cannot treat the fever. They can't get the fever down. They don't have transportation, so they will call EMT or ambulance to take their child to the emergency room because as parents, you do whatever you possibly can to make sure that you can take care of your child. And so us being able to fill medicine cabinets with the help of our funders is a bigger deal than we know.
Being insured, I know when I go to the pharmacy sometime, I'm in tears when I leave being insured. So I can't even imagine what it's like for an uninsured family, especially a single mom with kids, having that difficulty. Let's get, and hats off to you guys for providing this, because I think this is monumental. Let's talk about the process.
Mm-hmm.
How would a family, first of all, go through the process of finding out if they can get into this free pharmacy program?
So if you are hearing this message, I would encourage you to first go to our website.
Mm-hmm.
It's medassist.org. That's MedassistIST.org. And look in under the eligibility tab to see if you're, first of all, eligible for the program.
Okay.
If you want to talk to a person, we are open 8 to 4:30 weekdays. You can certainly call us, and our social workers will walk you through the process to make sure that you have all the things necessary, or you at least know how to collect information.
Okay.
You need proof of where you live. You need proof of your income.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll start the ball running,
okay.
rolling, I should say. The other thing is, if you are dialing in, or if you go on our website, you can actually upload documents straight on our website.
Mm-hmm.
We now accept pictures of documents, so you don't have to have access to a fax machine or
okay.
anything like that.
Okay.
We try to make it as easy as possible when it comes to getting in the system.
Meeting people where they are.
Yes. So pictures are fantastic as well.
Okay.
If you visit a clinic, local clinic in your area, no matter where you are in the state, I would ask them if they work with NC Medisys and if they can send your prescriptions to us as a pharmacy. So when they ask you, where's your pharmacy, you would choose us
okay.
versus the local CVS or something like that
okay.
because you're in our program now. Our social workers will do everything they can to make sure that you have all the I's dotted and the
mm-hmm.
T's crossed.
Mm-hmm.
And they work tirelessly to get people in the system. We're
okay.
not, we don't come from a place of no. We really try to do whatever we can to get you in. We also serve people that do not have documentation. So
mm-hmm.
we don't want that to be a barrier for anyone who's interested or need our services.
You might need to repeat that again.
Yes. So we serve those who do not have documentation.
Okay.
So we encourage you to come take a look at the website. It is also we have Spanish right now, but we can certainly, if you call our number, we can make sure that we have some type of person translating. If
mm-hmm.
you have, there's a understanding of the English language barrier
okay.
there. We are always coming from a place of yes. So we're going to try to do everything possible to get you enrolled.
Okay.
Once you get an enrollment letter that says you're in, your prescription should be in your hands within 7 to 10 days. So
mm-hmm.
there's a quick turnaround for our process versus if you were to do one of the PAP programs for a pharmaceutical company
okay.
where you fill out those applications. It sometimes can take 6 weeks, and we know that's a long time to wait for
medicine.
Some of the medication.
Absolutely.
So we try to cut it down to 7 to 10 days. Sometimes it's less than that. If it's a stat medication, we overnight it to
okay.
you.
Okay. What are some of the eligibility requirements that you look for?
Yeah. So for us, you have to be a North Carolina resident.
Okay.
And then you also have to have no prescription insurance.
Okay.
So some people may have the ability to see a doctor
mm-hmm.
Under their prescription plan, but
mm-hmm.
they don't actually have help getting prescription medicine
right,
with their
right,
plan.
Right, right.
So just, you know, I want to implore people, just because we say uninsured a lot of the times, it doesn't mean that just any insurance. It means
right,
that
right.
specifically prescription insurance.
Right,
you
right.
you can't have that.
Okay.
And then we can help.
Okay.
So those are basically the two main requirements
mm-hmm.
For our program, because we're statewide. So
mm-hmm.
as long as you live in the state of North Carolina and you don't have prescription medicine, there is a high chance that we can probably help you.
I can imagine. It's sounding so foreign to me, because I have insurance and I've had insurance. I've been fortunate to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why you work every day. But premiums are so high. Sometimes you have to decide what part of the insurance plan you can handle and what part you can't, because
mm-hmm.
you still got to factor in a monthly budget. Will I be able to eat if I get this part of the plan? It's so alarming to me, because
mm-hmm.
I don't have challenges, so to speak, but I know when I go through it, I have to really pay attention to what I'm doing. But I can't imagine for somebody who doesn't have insurance, what that is in their head when they have to make these decisions. It's so crazy to me just to hear this.
Yes. If I, you know, if there are any like providers listening, like pharmacists or any doctors or nurses that are listening, they see and talk to these people that are in need of medication and they know how important it is for them to have it. Because from a medical standpoint, they understand if you go a couple of days with your without your high blood pressure or insulin, you may not see the effects that it has on your body, but there are things happening that you, it's so sad that you could counter if you only had your medicine, right? So having a program like this, it also helps you stay compliant because the medicine is mailed to you, so you don't have to worry about that part, like transportation
to get
the medicine. You're actually mailed to you, and then you're notified through text and through email well before your refill, so that you can have time to request the refill and it mail out to you. So we always put those kind of processes in place so that people stay compliant, one. And then the application process, the social workers walk you through it because, to your point, sometimes making a decision about what you should do is overwhelming and choosing.
It's blowing my mind sitting here thinking about it right now. Are you serious right now?
Yeah, so we've gone through and always sort of revisit our application process just to make sure that we are not creating barriers ourselves for our folks that need
us.
We want to make it as easy as possible. There are rules, of course. We're under the Board of Pharmacy, and then we have most of our medication, well, I should say 20% of the medicine that we provide, including insulin, is donated through our generous pharmaceutical companies, but there are parameters in which we have to operate to provide that medication to our patients. But then the 80% that we dispense, we purchase. So we have a little bit of leeway with that medication. So it's, you know, we just try to figure out source the medicine as best we can, and then use it as resourceful as we can, right, so that people can get what they need.
Let's dispel any perception about trust factor with this medicine. How do you all go about getting your medicine? Let's address that first.
Okay, so we get our medicine from, we have seven.
I want to give the pharmaceutical industry their props.
We have seven pharmaceutical partners like Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, AbbVie, that donate medication to us.
Donate. Now, do you hear that? Donate.
They donate it to us. What it looks like, and some people may have heard this term, but maybe not, it's called bulk replenishment. So basically, if we give out 2,000 vials of insulin, then Eli Lilly replaces those vials for us every month. Everything we use, they'll replace it. All we have to do is tell them how much we've used every year on a monthly report, and they send the next shipment.
That's amazing to me, because I never thought the pharmaceutical industry, I thought it was always take, and they're giving at huge amounts that are very helpful to the citizenship of any community, really.
Yes, you're right. NC Medicis is lucky to be one of the recipients, but you're right. There are other entities that access this bulk replenishment program as well. Now, the other part of you asked, where do we get the medication, is we get a lot of our medication from Direct Relief. It's a global sort of model like we are, where they're sourcing free medicine and then they're providing it to entities like us. So that's Direct Relief. You may have heard of their name a lot of times when they're a natural disaster of some sort, but they also are one of our biggest suppliers. And then we also have like AmeriCares and some of the other nonprofits out there that source medication. Our over-the-counter side is a little different. We have over-the-counter medicine that's provided to anyone who's 18 and over and lives in North Carolina. And so that medication is a little different. It's sort of, we treat it as if you walked into a CVS, for instance, and no one is actually policing the medicine you pick up when you buy it. There's no, you know, it's no process. So that's how we sort of treat it when you come to get over-the-counter medicine. We educate you on the product if you're not aware of what or why you should be taking it. We do have sometimes volunteer pharmacists and volunteer nurses and physicians on staff to do that. We do like to educate people before they take medication, or at least have access to someone they can ask, right?
Absolutely.
So we do give that medicine out, and we get that free from Second Harvest Food Bank in Central Carolina, because they supply a lot of nonprofits with free product, and they are just a wonderful collaborator. So they give us the over-the-counter medicine, and volunteers come and sort the medicine. In our office, we have thousands of volunteers come in every year sorting medicine, and then we turn around and provide that to the community as a whole.
That's interesting, because, as a matter of fact, Second Harvest will be our guest next week on
the
show.
Oh, that's
so
great.
I'll be able to ask them that, and they'll go, where'd you find that? that's absolutely excellent. One thing that had just popped up into my mind, we didn't discuss this off mic. Let me take it to this. There are a lot of, I guess, single mothers, expectant single mothers that are below the age of 18. Is there an age limit on this eligibility as well, in terms of, because those mothers that are, I guess, below the age of 18 need prenatal care as well. So is that something that you guys can help with as well?
Yes. So for our purpose, because we always have to have safeguards,
right?
As an organization, you want to have safeguards.
As
we can get the medication, we work with a lot of entities that serve exactly the population you're talking about. So we work with them directly and provide the medication to them, and then they give it out to those folks, because there is a age limit that they don't reach, according to us. We actually have to hand it to someone who's an adult.
Okay, I got you.
That's the only thing. We give out children medicine, of course.
Right,
people can take the medicine, but we have to hand it to an adult.
That's. I wanted to approach that because I know it registered in my mind. These young mothers are below the age of 18. So how do they get help? Obviously, it would have to be a parent or some adult around them that can be the responsible party in terms of being of legal age to be able to accept this medicine and to distribute it to somebody in their household.
Yes. Okay. And I know that a lot of times, you know, we have safeguards specifically around abuse situations. So, but you kind of limit it across the board when it comes to medicine, whether it's vitamins or or pain medicine.
You all give out Flintstone vitamins.
Yes, we do. We do Flintstone vitamins. So we want to make sure that we are being not only good stewards, but making sure that people are educated about what they're actually taking, and what that means. So we do have pharmacists on hand to communicate with them.
One of the things that I see as part of your programs that I believe is only in Charlotte is the OTC free store.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the OTC free store in Charlotte, and then how you try to replicate that on a statewide basis.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay.
So the OTC free store was a brainchild of our former CEO, and we were so happy to see it come to fruition. It's been around now 4 years, and it's a place where, like walking into a Walgreens, but there's no check, right? You don't have to pay anything. You pick out what you want, and you put it in your basket, and you go to the register, and they say, have a nice day. You know, they check you out. This program.
Am I dreaming? Are you actually saying
no.
This?
It is an amazing program. We give out things from pain medicines, children's vitamins, to knee braces, bandages, women's care, women's health, wheelchairs, things that you would find in a Walgreens or one of those retail pharmacies, we probably have in-house in our free store. Now, it's located in Charlotte, but that does not limit who we serve. Anyone can come to the free store. It doesn't matter if where you live. You can, as long as you live in North Carolina, we will serve you out of our free store.
Okay.
The difference is for the free store is that it is open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday every week. And you may, at Walgreens, I go there probably once a week, but at our store, you only can come once a month.
Okay.
And that is to sort of make sure those safeguards exist so that there's no abuse. A lot of seniors use our vitamins as a way to supplement. And so we know that, you know, in those bottles, usually it could probably last about 30 to 40 to 50 days. Mm-hmm. So by the time the 30 days is up, they can get their new supply. So okay. it's a good thing that's why we chose 30 days to sort of like.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And we have seen a decline, of course, in visits to our free store after the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And now it's creeping back up. Okay. We see over like 1,000 people a month through that vessel. Now, the mobile free pharmacy actually was around longer than the free store, but it is the same concept. You said, like, take it on the road, right? You walk in, you get to choose the medicine that you want, and then you get to talk to pharmacists if you'd like. Mm-hmm. We have had to change the model during the pandemic to make it a drive-through, sort of contactless sort of services. But our hope is to be back in person. It's where we go, you know, house ourselves like we were at a church, a local church or a community center. Mm-hmm. And we set up shop basically where the medicine is easily seen and chosen. You roll up, you fill out your paperwork, who you are basically. There's no ID checked or anything like that because we don't want to create barriers.
Right.
You fill out your paperwork and then you select the medication that you want for that day. You get 10 items and then you may get to choose like some of those other items that really aren't medicine, but like a knee brace or something like that that would help you make things easier for you or your family member.
I've gotten so into this conversation that I forgot to mention who we were talking to. this is Brenda Voss. She's the CEO, Chief Development Officer for North Carolina Med Assist. And we're talking about pharmaceutical assistance pharmacy assistance or prescription assistance in the state of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Interesting conversation, very much needed. I'm sure we're blowing people's minds this morning because being a unique entity in the state, being the only one, not having any competition, that puts you all in high demand if people know about it. That's
we want people to know about us. So if you run a local pharmacy and someone comes up to pay for their medication and they're asking you to give them maybe 3 pills or 4 pills because you know they're not insured, we encourage you to tell them that NC Medisys can probably help you.
Okay.
They're seeing it every day. Okay. Pharmacists are talking to people every day that cannot afford their medicine. They're
every
talking
day.
To them every
I mean,
day.
I watch people shake their heads and walk away from counters every
yes.
day.
Yes. And we would love for the next comment to be, here's a card for NC Medisys, or make sure you go to medisys.org. They could probably help you. Mm-hmm. And we probably can in a lot of cases. And we want to make sure that if you know, at least try us. Mm-hmm. You know, there may be some, maybe you're right on the line financially or something like that, and you want to have questions, you want to ask questions about how does that work. Mm-hmm. Maybe you just lost your job, so your taxes won't show that, right? They'll show your income from last year.
Right.
Well, we can get through that. If you are somebody who lives with another person, they provide you shelter. We do not consider that person's income as a part of yours to make it you eligible. We want to know who you're getting support from. Like, do you have someone providing shelter or maybe somebody's providing you transportation or something like that? But we don't count that as a part of your income to make you to make you eligible for our process. So we want to make sure that you call if you have a question about it, you call us or check our website out because you never know what you're saying no to yourself to by not even contacting us.
You have to ask the question.
Ask the question.
You must ask the question.
Yes.
A lot of times, pride is a very powerful thing. And a lot of times, we don't want people to know, as I call it, our business. It's not about knowing your business. A lot of people are private about what's going on in their lives because people talk. Of course they talk. But when it comes to a health issue that could be life or death, at some point in time, those are the questions that you have to ask regardless. But you just have to be smart about who you ask.
Yeah. It's so funny you mentioned pride. There's a story that happened at at NC Medisys. A man comes into the office. He is clearly not in a good mood.
Okay.
He is snapping at the receptionist when she's asking him questions, the social workers, like he's just snapping. We care for him. And he leaves. And then one of the social workers is leaving for lunch, mm-hmm. and she sees him standing in front of the building sobbing. And she just asked him if he's okay, mm-hmm. and then he said that he had never had to ask anybody for anything, mm-hmm. and that was the chip that was on his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And then when he got the help, it just sort of
consumed him. Yeah, absolutely.
So when you mention pride, mm-hmm. we all have it. It's harder for a lot of us to ask for help than some people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we one of the things that we pride ourselves on, our entire staff, mm-hmm. we pick the right people mm-hmm. to work for mm-hmm. us.
You have to be you have to have a customer service mindset.
And we provide a dignified experience.
Mm-hmm.
Every time,
mm-hmm.
because we understand we're getting people at their worst. They're sick.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what pharmacists do, right? Yeah, you take care of people who need some type of help, health wise, mm-hmm. right? And most of the time, they're needing prescription filled that will make them feel better, make them, you know, more aware of their situation, because we have behavioral health medication as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we understand that.
Okay.
So we want to make sure that people understand that we understand, we see you, you matter, and we're going to do everything we can.
I've been there in my line of business and career, entertainment. You lose jobs,
mm-hmm.
and it's not necessarily because of anything you did. It can be. It doesn't have to be your productivity. It could be just the environment in which you're in. It could be budget. It could be a number of things. So I've been there, trying to figure out how do I rotate and get back on track with the things that are important, like my health first, because I can't go find another job unless my health is intact. Let's be real. So I can't even imagine. I can't imagine, because I've been there, but how important it is for you to drop that pride
mm-hmm.
and seek assistance, because everybody at some point in time in your life is going to need help outside of your control.
Mm-hmm.
That's what faith is all about.
Yeah.
So at some point in time, you have to trust the experts, and it's about finding out and doing the research to find out who are the right experts. And so that's why I applaud North Carolina MedAssist and wanted to have you guys on today, because I just thought in a world where money is at the root of everything and drives everything, this is not that.
No.
It is not that. So there's an entity here in the state of North Carolina that is designed to help the people who need the help the most. And I have to applaud you for that, because mm-hmm. for you to step in that role
mm-hmm.
and be responsible, you have to have a great deal, especially when you have encounters like you did with the gentleman
mm-hmm.
outside
mm-hmm.
The facility in Charlotte. That's a lot of weight for you to carry as a CEO in a situation where you're providing for people who can't provide for themselves.
Oh, yeah. I am glad you said that, because there are a lot of people who are in the service industry that really do not understand the weight
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That comes with it if you're considering being in a career that mm-hmm. provides assistance. There are some stories that would make you go to the bathroom and cry.
Oops.
Like, you have to excuse yourself so that you can gather yourself, right? And what I admire about our organization is that we do have that compassion, mm-hmm. but about half of us have been in the predicament where we had to use the services before.
Right.
So,
right.
So when we say compassion, is oftentimes empathy that you're seeing, mm-hmm. because they've been where you mm-hmm. are, and mm-hmm. we totally get it. I grew up in rural South Carolina.
Really rural.
Really rural. No stoplight.
No stoplights.
No stoplight. Where I grew up. Okay.
Really?
So, wow. So when I talk about why it matters to me about mm-hmm. the work I do, and mm-hmm. I'm going to try not to get emotional.
Oh, no, you can't help
it's but because the poverty that I grew up around. Now, my family, we paid for lunch every day. Mm-hmm. My dad would leave. We had, you know, four girls. He'd mm-hmm. leave the $4 on the mm-hmm. table every morning mm-hmm. so we could get lunch was a dollar mm-hmm. each. So we didn't experience food insecurity or anything like that.
Yes.
But it was next door.
It's
it
all
was
around.
The door down. They're my cousins.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew they were like good, hardworking people. Mm-hmm. Back then when I was growing up, you worked on a farm mm-hmm. for somebody mm-hmm. and, you know, the lowest wages you were paid, mm-hmm. you work hard, right? And seeing the opportunities slip through their fingers mm-hmm. because of where they were mm-hmm. or they didn't know this. Mm-hmm. And then my parents sort of driving us. I worked in the tobacco field wow. on the summer because wow. my parents wanted to say to me, you choose, right? Yeah, like, give me a choice.
Yeah.
But I knew that there were so many people that did not have the same mm-hmm. that I had mm-hmm. and hardworking. Good people that give everything they had for you.
Right.
I mean, you know that community. And it still exists today when
right.
I go home.
Right, right,
that's what
right,
I feel, right? So when I go to rural North Carolina, I see my aunts, uncles, my cousins, the people I grew up with. That's who I'm looking at in the faces of those people that we're serving.
You absolutely
so
can.
It's a dignified experience because I'm treating you like my family. Mm-hmm. That's what you mm-hmm. are to us as mm-hmm. NC Medicists. Mm-hmm. You're family, and we're going to take care of you.
Okay.
So that I think that's the biggest experience, the difference in our experience in NC Medicine mm-hmm. versus some of the services out there is because we really carry the experiences that we've had ourselves
mm-hmm.
and you see it how we treat people.
Absolutely.
So that, you know, I wanted to share that because, you know, yes, I carry a weight as the leader of this organization, but I carry it with my heart. You know, with every decision is made thinking of those people that we're serving.
Right.
And that's it is what it is, and the staff does the same.
You know, that's what I love about nonprofits. Nothing is driven by money.
Yes.
It's all driven by a purpose, a cause, a mission. And that's why with empowering you, we wanted to reestablish this platform, because anytime you look around, we hear news about everything going on. We hear about Ukraine. We hear about COVID. We hear about this. We hear about that. But we never hear about those things in life that are here to really aid those that are not able to provide for themselves because of economy, because of job situations, because of what's going on around us in the world. And it becomes a lot looking on the outside, and you realize that you're blessed because you have a job. You can pay for certain things. You can provide insurance for your family. But then you're in a minority. A clear minority,
yeah.
because there are so many people out there, like you said, right around the corner, right next door, people that you may or may not even know. They don't have to be family, but they are human beings just the same.
Mm-hmm.
And they are struggling. They are struggling just trying to make it to the next day. So my thing is, look, while we talk about all the stuff that the basketball players do mm-hmm. and all this stuff that ends up in the news, that's not really important. It drives Facebook. It drives conversation on Facebook. But how do we go about helping those people that really, really need the help on the ground level?
Yeah.
And my hat's off to you guys, because it's a tremendous undertaking to be able to be the only one in the state. You're out with the mobile free pharmacy. You have the free store. And I got to imagine there are still people that are still struggling because they don't even, unless they're hearing it today, they don't even know you guys exist.
Exactly.
So how do you go about marketing North Carolina Medicines?
Well, we do it in multiple ways. One, our first and foremost, we do have 92 clinic partners across mm-hmm. the state. So they're not in every state, every county, and we're working on that. Mm-hmm. But we at least needed folks that are already seeing the folks that would be eligible to at least mm-hmm. know about us.
Okay.
So that was the purpose of getting this collaborative model where the clinics, once they get seen by a physician mm-hmm. and they need a prescription, then they send them to us.
Okay.
That was one of the main ways that we get folks. Okay. Two is self-referral. If you heard about us and you Googled us, free medication in North Carolina, NC Medicine pops up.
Mm-hmm.
And you can contact us directly. You don't have to come through a clinic.
Right.
The other way is you hear on the media, like today,
right?
Share it with somebody.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of information, right?
Yeah.
It can be shareable. And you may not need it yourself today because you never know what's around the corner sometimes. You probably know somebody who could use it.
Right.
Or you're thinking someone could use it. You're not sure. Share it with them that we exist and they should reach out and contact us.
You should make it a point to do that, whether it affects you right now or everybody knows somebody. So just pass this information on. Of course, this segment will be on our website through our podcast. So if somebody needed to listen to this to get the details, you don't remember all the stuff that we talked about today because we've been talking for about 40 minutes or so. That's fine. That's what the podcasts are for. Now, we mentioned earlier people going through job changing situations. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this transitional jobs program you guys have.
Well, we're very proud of our transitional job program. When we started the store, it was right around the time that Charlotte was doing in the midst of a study to address the lack of economic mobility if you were born in certain zip codes, right? You're more likely to die in that same zip code and no economic change.
Why are we continuously hearing repeat? Somebody else on a show 2 weeks ago just talked about that.
Yeah, and then it was a sort of a black eye to Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put tons of resources and human capital on this. Mm-hmm. How do we fix this without just launching a different program and expecting it to succeed, because they typically don't, right? There has to be some kind of movement, not just a program, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the study found that one of the clearest ways to address this is social capital.
Okay.
How do we make room for people?
Mm-hmm.
How do companies make room for people in certain zip codes?
Right.
So you'd hear of certain companies are headquartered in Charlotte or have visibility in Charlotte making jobs available to only certain zip codes, right?
Okay.
So making room. Like, so when the applications come on, they're like, okay, this person is from one of our poor zip codes in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make sure that we get them in our system, in our program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to exclude anyone, but that's what equity
is
about, right? You're about... Yeah. How do we make it equal? Mm-hmm. How do we give everybody an opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
And so they were seeing that. And our transitional job program was a way for us to do it.
Mm-hmm.
While we had staff, we were thinking we had someone on staff that was educated in developing adults in their best way possible as far as developing a career and choosing a career that fit them.
Okay.
And so we thought we can use this resource that we have to also run our store and warehouse. So you are working with customers directly.
Mm-hmm.
You're working with logistics and organizing, coming up with processes, technology.
Mm-hmm.
You have 120 days to gain employment, full-time employment while you're in our program, because we're also working with other entities.
Okay.
And so they build a social capital in that they have 37 full-time employees that are treating them like they're a part of the team, which they are to us.
Mm-hmm.
They're in staff meetings. We once had a young man in a staff meeting pull out his camera and take pictures, and everyone was looking around like, what is going on? But he said he had never been in a staff meeting before.
That's amazing.
And he wanted to capture that moment. He had never been in a situation where people came together and included him. And so then we were thinking, oh gosh, the things that we think are mundane, they're capturing these experiences because they've never experienced it before.
Right.
So the folks that are in our program may have had previous incarceration or they've had long period of time unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about people who probably were uninsured and not getting behavioral health medication, or they had maybe health issues. There's a lot of reasons why people have barriers to unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And we are about that second chance and getting you up on your feet and making sure that you understand we all want you to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
So they work with volunteers. They do a lot of work that it's external. We don't hide them in the back, right? They are working with clients.
Right.
They're working with customers. They're working with volunteers, alongside volunteers.
Right.
And they are gaining that experience and taking that and using it when they go out. We've had 30 of the 31 go on to have full-time jobs. Some of them entrepreneurs, some of them now have vehicles that they didn't have before, stable housing. All of that, we're changing their lives one at a time with the help of our funders that help fund this program. So we're very, very proud of this program, and we're hoping to expand it. You know, who knows, in the future we could probably have folks go through the program across the state, right? Mm-hmm. We have partners all over the state. Yeah, how can we you know, make sure that we expand that and give more and more people opportunities?
Well, I can honestly say I'm full today. I'm very full because this has been a very worthwhile conversation. We're talking to North Carolina Medicists CEO and CDO Brenda Voss about their programs, their free pharmacy programs, their mobile free pharmacy, their free store in Charlotte, transitional job programs, and just how this great organization came about. It's the only one in the state. It's an exclusive. And once people start to get their hooks in you guys and find out exactly what you're doing, like I did today, I can predict that you guys are going to grow.
Yeah,
I would like to think that you, because the need, I think need is starting to outweigh greed.
Mm.
Need is starting to outweigh greed in a lot of different places. I think over the last 8 years, I think people are really seeing how our society rolls. We're starting to see our weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
We've been seeing our weaknesses. But this is a way, when you have these type of organizations, especially nonprofits, that step up to the plate to make sure that those that are left out are now being included.
Mm-hmm.
Speaks monumental. I mean, it's phenomenal. I think it's, how can we give you all an award? That's my question. That is, well, Brenda Voss. Anything we haven't touched on that you want
to? Well, I just would love to leave the telephone number that you can call, mm-hmm. because I know I mentioned website, but we understand not everyone has access to technology in that way, but you can call us directly at 1-866-331-1348.
You can go ahead and repeat it again.
You call us at 1-866-331-1348, and our social workers will talk you through the process to see if you're eligible and how we can get your paperwork started today. Okay. So you can have your medicine in the next 10
minutes. Mention your website as well?
Yes. So if you are able to visit us online, you can do that at www.medicis.org, which is MEDASSIST.org.
Okay. Great conversation today. Again, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come all the way here from Charlotte to get this information out to our community. Again, the Med Assist mobile unit will be in Charlotte, will be in our area, I think, in the fall.
Yes. So we have two mobile events planned. Remember, you can come out, no ID required, have to be an adult.
Okay.
And we will serve you by giving you, fill your medicine cabinet, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be in Winston-Salem October 7th and Greensboro September 16th.
Okay.
You can take a look at our website to find out where. We're still nailing that down right now, but we know the dates. October 7th for Winston-Salem and September 16th for Greensboro. You do not have to live in that city to come to get product. If you hear about it, you can come. It doesn't matter where you are from. You can come.
Thank you so very much for your time. Thank you so much for this information. I think a lot of people are going to benefit from this, as they should. And that's what we're about here on Empowering You. This is Brenda Voss. She is the CEO, CDO of North Carolina Medicis. Thank you again for all this great information.
Thank you so much, Brian, for caring enough to pick up the phone and dial and get us on the phone. We're very thankful when someone sees us and values us enough